from the University of Kentucky. I'm going to give a few opening kind of framing remarks about this session. And then we have a stellar lineup of panelists today, all with strong connections into public health PBRNs across the U.S. And we'll be sharing some work happening across these public health PBRNs. So I'll give a few opening comments about the work, and then I'm actually the first panelist to talk about one of our cross-cutting studies through public health PBRNs, and then you're going to hear from several others who are leaders, scientific and practice leaders in public health research networks across the country. So what are public health PBRNs? This is research networks, practice-based research networks have been around for probably a half century now in clinical medicine and primary care especially. These are networks of real-world health professionals who do real-world work in health and healthcare delivery systems. And research networks built around these practice settings allow us to study the effectiveness and efficiency and equity of policies and practices in real-world settings. And what we've done with support from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation over the last 7 years now is build a cohort of public health PBRNs around the country. These are research networks of public health practice settings that come together with academic and research partners around the country to study innovations in public health practice, to study policy and practice change and administrative change in public health settings, and to understand the health and economic impact of those activities. And you can see these networks, 32 now across the country, more than 2,000 state and local public health agencies across the country are connected to one or more of our PBRNs around the country, and a growing cadre of studies. I think we're up to over 80 individual research projects that have been organized, designed, and implemented collaboratively through these networks. And we use the PBRN model that has proven well in primary care and clinical medicine. We use this model for collaboratively identifying, designing, conducting studies, and then collaboratively translating and applying those findings back to policy and practice settings. And I think we're far beyond the proof of concept stage now that, yes, this model does work in public health, just as it has worked well in primary care and healthcare delivery systems. So I'm going to talk about a couple of cross-cutting studies that we have underway, and all of the panelists today are connected to one or both of these cross-cutting studies that conducted through PBRNs. We're now at a stage of maturity now where we can implement larger-scale coordinated research collaboratively involving multiple PBRNs around the country to help to generate more generalizable evidence across a larger number and a larger array of public health practice settings, and also to improve the strength of our and rigor of our research findings by supporting more complicated and intricate research designs and analytic strategies. One of those cross-cutting studies is the Multi-Network Practice and Outcome Variation Examination Study, or IMPROVE for short. This was a study launched in mid-2012, again with support from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, with the goals that you see here. We really wanted to test for the first time the ability to use multiple PBRNs across the country to develop sound measures of public health implementation of high-value public health services, and then to collect data on those measures in a standardized way across a large collection of local public health practice settings so we can support analyses to learn from the geographic variation that we see in the implementation of high-value public health strategies, what causes and influences that variation, and what are the consequences of that variation, ultimately with a goal of looking at health and economic consequences. The study is focused in three domains of activity that are kind of right at the heart of public health, what public health agencies and their partners do. measures of chronic disease prevention, a growing area of importance and responsibility for public health, measures of communicable disease control, one of our traditional roles that, in the wake of the Ebola outbreak, we're reminded of how important those capabilities are. And then a third, looking at measures of practice variation in environmental health protection, another longstanding public health responsibility that's also getting heightened attention and importance in the wake of climate change and built environment issues. There's a second, more recent multi-network research initiative that we've launched, again, with the foundation support, also through PPRNs, that's called the Public Health Delivery and Cost Studies Initiative, or DACS, for short. This is a, and again, you're going to hear from a couple of our panelists today about their DACS-related work as well. This study also involves multiple networks. In the DACS case, we have 11 PBRNs across the country that have been working on DACS studies over the past year. The goal here is to look on the cost and resource use side of the equation to understand and learn from variation. So these studies are all using and adapting established cost measurement and cost estimation methodologies, applying in the public health settings into one or more, again, high-value public health services or programs. Measuring cost carefully so that they can identify the cost of implementing selected high-value public health strategies, collecting those data across multiple settings so they can look at variation in cost and understand the drivers of costs, the determinants, and the consequences of variation in cost and resource use for public health activities. So you're going to hear a bit about both of these studies today, our IMPROVE multi-network study focused on implementation variation, and our DACS studies focused on understanding and learning from cost variation in public health activities. I'm going to start and giving you a little bit of sharing some findings from looking across the six different IMPROVE studies to look at what we're learning from across-network variation in implementation of high-value public health services. For the IMPROVE study, we were fortunate to have six of our leading public health PBRNs around the country who were competitively selected to be a part of this study, again, back in mid-2012. You can see the networks here, quite a bit of geographic variation, quite a bit of variation in terms of the network size and composition. In total, over 300 local public health practice settings represented in these six networks. And a mix of different kind of structures and strategies in terms of how these networks operate, but again, all with a commitment to the collaborative PBRN model. The IMPROVE measures I mentioned, we focused on three domains of activity: chronic disease prevention, communicable disease control, and environmental health protection. Within those three domains, we were interested in developing and collecting measures on a number of different dimensions of implementation. Looking at including measures of just availability, whether or not an activity in those domains is available, is performed in the community or performed by an agency, measures of volume and intensity of implementation, measures of capacity in terms of looking at labor or monetary inputs assigned to an activity, looking at reach or the proportion of the target population that's actually reached by the activity in the community, measures of quality such as effectiveness or timeliness of delivery, and then also potentially measures of efficiency, looking at resource use in conjunction with a given volume of activity that's produced. So our goal was to develop measures across these different dimensions of activity, in part to test PBRN capabilities for developing and then capturing these measures. The measures also have two different levels of measurement. Some measures are focused at the community level. So we look at activities that are implemented in the community, served by the local community, served by a local public health agency, regardless of which actor or combination of actors actually does the activity. It's a community level measure where we're agnostic as to what organization actually implements the activity. Other measures are a bit more specific that focus on the local governmental public health agency and their direct responsibility and contributions to implementation. So we have a mix of both community level and agency level measures here. We used a collaborative process. We used the power of our networks to first identify and select measures and then go out and to collect them. We used a multi-phase Delphi process to identify candidate measures and then select them using the criteria that you see here. Through literature reviews and through the power of the experts embedded in our networks here, but in both academic and practice settings, we identified in those three domains of activity over 300 candidate measures that were considered. And then we rated them, again, using practice and research experts in all of our networks. We rated them through a series of Delphi surveys on these selection criteria that you see here. And then used the scores on the ratings of those measures to ultimately select which measures would become part of our core improved measurement set to then go out and collect data on. This is an example of the kind of Delphi graphings that we did for some of our, these are our chronic disease measures. You can see how they scored on in terms of health impact and in terms of feasibility, because we often want to pick measures that have a high expected health impact if they're performed in the community. And also, we need to have measures that are feasible for our networks need to perceive they're feasible to collect data on. So we picked, we chose measures in this way by looking at that upper quadrant in these different measurement criteria. So we ended up with a total of 27 measures distributed in those three domains that you see here. 8 chronic disease measures focused primarily on tobacco prevention and obesity prevention, nutrition, physical activity work. 14 measures of communicable disease control regarding immunization, enteric disease control, sexually transmitted infections control, and TB control. And then 5 measures in the environmental health protection domain focused primarily on lead and food safety. We also had an additional 3 measures that were considered optional because some networks were very passionate and committed to collect them, but for other networks, they weren't feasible. So we had some other additional measures as well that were not part of this core, 27 core. For the analytic measures here, I'll in kind of showing you cross-network variation of these measures. We've done a couple things. We've linked the improved data collected by all of our 6 networks with several secondary data sources. One is the 2013 NACHO profile. Census survey fielded periodically of local health departments by NACHO gives us good data on institutional and financial characteristics of local governmental public health agencies. So we can explore how institutional factors affect implementation of these activities. We also link these data with area-level measures of community and demographic and socioeconomic characteristics from the multi-data source area resource file constructed by HRSA. And fitted county level estimates to our geographic areas that are served by the local health departments here. We use hierarchical models to look to explore patterns of variation and correlates of variation in these measures across local areas, across and within the 6 states that are a part of these networks, using both random and fixed effects models depending on our intent of our analysis. Then we use some variance decomposition methods to identify the relative strength of several key institutional and community factors in explaining variation in the implementation of these measures. So let me give you some highlights of results from this overall improved work. This slide shows you, you can't read the individual measures here, but just to show variation in the availability of data, the success with which we had in using our networks to actually collect data on each of these 27 measures at the local level across 6 states. And you can see that we had more success in some measures than others. In general, we're looking at the proportion of practice settings that actually we were able to obtain and report data on these different measures. The measures that tended to be more universally available were actually measures that our networks were able to collect through surveys of local, primarily surveys of local health officials. So they were able to use their connections to get local health officials to report up data through a survey mechanism. Some of the other measures that are coming off of administrative data sources, existing surveillance systems maintained by state or local health agencies, or other administrative data tended to fall. We have more variation in the availability of these activities depending on success with accessing measures and success with finding data sources that could conform to our standard definitions for measures. So that was the first very important learning of just how successful can we be as a network of networks in collecting measures of high-value public health implementation strategies that we all believed were important in terms of high impact from a health or economic standpoint. Tells us also where we need to continue to work to build capacity for collecting and analyzing measures across settings. But overall, quite successful for our first foray into a multi-network process. I'm going to step in and give you a couple of examples just to showcase the variation in some of these measures. Not all of them. We don't have time to go through all of them. But this is an example of a measure in our chronic disease domain, a measure of capacity. It's local health department resources allocated to promoting physical activity activities on a per capita basis for the most recent fiscal year. You can see the variation profiled here across our six states, and then the six state total as well. And this is one where we see enormous variation really in local health department resources invested in promoting physical activity. From a low of less than a penny per capita per year to a high of over $47 per capita per year. And you can see the wide variation, a long right-hand side tail there. The median local public health agency in this across these six states spent about 19 cents per capita per year on physical activity promotion. But again, wide variation. If these resources are flowing into effective strategies, you would expect to see over some period of time some real variation in outcomes as a result, with this level of multiple orders of magnitude variation in spending. Looking at a measure of availability, implementation of community-wide health education campaigns to promote physical activity. Again, looking across the six states here, we see almost a threefold level of variation in implementation of these activities across states, and overall a pretty modest level of performance, less than 50% of the communities overall. This is a community-level measure, so it's less than 50% of the communities reporting the availability of these community-wide health education campaigns for physical activity. Again, if these strategies actually are effective in shaping health behaviors, then over time, this level of variation should translate into important health outcomes. So we need to understand what causes the variation, and also the consequences of this variation. In the tobacco arena, looking at implementation of clean indoor air policy enforcement activities. Again, a lot of variation. We tracked whether or not any violations were reported in the jurisdiction, whether any investigations for compliance with Clean Indoor Air Act laws or ordinances were conducted, and whether or not any citations or fines were ordered during the most recent calendar year. And you can see, again, variation in those measures, three- and five-fold levels of variation in some of the violation measures across local areas. And then looking at the six-state averages there on the right-hand side, again, overall, fairly modest levels of activity with regard to policy enforcement for clean air. This is absolutely an evidence-based strategy. We know that it has both short-term and longer-run health effects. And so this level of variation across local areas in efforts to enforce clean laws should have important health consequences. So we, again, need to understand what are the causes as well as the consequences of variation. Overall, that you can see the lighter blue slide there, the last in the five series, shows whether or not any of these policy enforcement activities were reported during the year. So you can see overall less than about a third of communities had evidence of any of these policy enforcement activities being coming into play. I think I'm going to skip. This was a little more complicated, so I may skip it to. Let's skip to a different domain. That was chronic disease, communicable disease. Do we see similar levels of variation in implementation of communicable disease activities? This is a measure, again, of capacity. It's the average full-time equivalent staffing for communicable disease intervention specialists per 100,000 population. This is based off of a CDC definition of what a communicable disease intervention specialist is and does, largely doing infectious disease control activities, especially for sexually transmitted infections. But these are the people that also get called into to doing contact tracing for Ebola, for example, in places that have experienced that over the last couple of months. Again, we see wide variation in staffing levels, capacity population size across states. And the six-state average is a little over 2 FTE per capita. It ranges from a high of over 3 in New Jersey to lower levels in other states. So, again, understanding what some of the drivers may be here. Another measure of quality, this is the average completion time for completing investigations of enteric disease case reports, how long on average it takes to complete an investigation of a reported case. Again, a fair amount of variation. These are measured in days here. The six-state average across communities is just under 10 days. It ranges from just a little over a day to over 50 days in one of our networks here. So we've also done some work more recently to look at the underlying patterns of variation in these measures in terms of what's driving the variation. Is it we see more variation at a state level or a local level? That's one analysis that gives us some insight into what some of the determinants of variation may be. Statewide capabilities, policies, and resources versus local level policies and practices and resources. And this slide just kind of showcases six of our measures and across the three domains and what variation we see in the across measures and the proportion of variation that is within state, meaning it's primarily local variation driving, versus the proportion of total variation that's really between state variation, meaning it's a kind of state level variation, state level forces that are driving variation there. And as you can see here, it's really a mixed bag, depending on the individual measure. We have some measures like physical activity promotion. It's primarily between state variation that's driving that, so suggesting that there's more a role for state-level policy or resources or standards that are driving variation there. Compared to, in the same domain, physical activity funding per capita, it's mostly within state variation, so primarily driven by local-level forces. Even in the same domain, even in areas you think resources and activities for physical activity would be aligned. But what drives variation, a very different set of drivers in thinking about state level versus local level drivers here. Finally, and I need to move on, we've done some work to look at correlates of variation in these measures across the states, and looking at specific institutional and community factors that explain variation in selected public health implementation measures here. Again, I've just shown the picture for five of our measures of tobacco policy enforcement, physical activity funding, enteric investigation time, STI staffing, and that fifth column there is food safety staffing. And you can see here, the black bar looks at how much just population size explains variation in these measures. Perhaps the economy is a scale issue coming into play there. You can see it depends. It has a significant effect only for the explaining variation in STI staffing, infection control staffing levels. You can see the purple bar there, local health department expenditures per capita resources explain significant amount of variation, especially for the enteric investigation time, again, STI staffing. Interesting, look at green there. Green is a measure of the racial composition of the community, and it explains substantial variation in three of these measures: tobacco policy enforcement, physical activity funding, and food safety staffing, suggesting, again, an equity dimension perhaps to some of the variation patterns that we see in those three measures. Overall, you can see the light blue and orange shows us we've still got a lot of unexplained variation in all five of these measures. Between 50% and between a half and two-thirds of the variation that we see is unexplained variation. A lot of that unexplained is state-level variation, you can see in the orange there. So some unobserved state-level factors seem to be important to many of these measures. But the pattern there, the correlates here, obviously vary across measures. So what does this tell us? First of all, we see clear evidence of wide variation in first the availability of these measures, our ability to collect them. But also, once collected, wide variation both within states and across states in the actual levels of implementation across states. The patterns of variation are really quite distinct across domains and even across individual activity levels, suggesting that again, determinants of variation in these measures are likely to be context specific, and we need to have a nuanced approach to looking at them. Overall, the institutional and community characteristics in that last slide I showed explain between a third and a half of the variation that we see in these measures, suggesting these are some factors that we need to really drill down on now and to look at ultimately causal pathways in terms of what's driving variation there. Some of that variation may be harmful in terms of the inability to reach populations at risk with effective practices. Some of it may reflect waste or inefficiency in how services are implemented. And again, some of that those patterns of variation may reflect inequities in performance that we need to move forward on. So we've got ongoing work in this area, and you're going to hear from our other panelists today on some of the ongoing work in these measures and other kinds of measures at a more granular level within our individual networks. A cleanup hitter today, a bonus speaker in the persona of Dr. Betty Beckmeyer, and her slides are tagged onto the bag of mine. She's agreed to kind of tell us where we're going from here in terms of scaling up and spreading this approach to multi-network measurement and analysis. So.
All right. Thanks, Glenn. So I will try to race through this very quickly. And this is about sort of next phases, next steps, and I have nothing to disclose. Some of you are familiar with FAST, the Public Health Activities and Services Tracking Study Project Initiative, whatever that I lead. And this sort of depicts where we're headed with this, and ultimately it really is about getting a better sense of what works for what populations and under what conditions. And it is really focused on looking at local public health systems. We know a lot more about statewide public health systems, but this is an effort that really tries to drill down to this local effort and through and with practice-based research networks. I'm going to talk really briefly about those boxes on the upper left, the data repository we're talking about, and FAST as a resource around data harmonization and standardization. So just very briefly, I presented on this yesterday. We've done a very recent suite of three studies. I've got some study briefs that folks can come access, get one of these study briefs from me if you'd like, about the suite of three studies we did around maternal child health and food safety and communicable disease control, but all using administrative data, very detailed administrative data from our colleagues in Florida, from Minnesota, Washington, a couple other states, and harmonizing those data together where we could. It was not always easy. Poor Minnesota got kind of left in the dust sometimes, to really start to see about making those kind of connections between when local public health department spends money on maternal child health, it has an impact on low rates of low birth weight in a beneficial way, rates of enteric disease in relationship to food safety, et cetera. So the bottom line is those studies sort of, for us, provide kind of a proof of concept that when you've got detailed data that is comparable across local health departments and states, and you can start to roll up to not just 87 health departments or 35 in Washington, et cetera, you could start to talk about hundreds of health departments or 100 plus health departments, and over many years, you can really start to get at that relationship between local public health department activity and outcomes that we're all looking for and eager for. So the proof of concept really sort of held true with those studies we just completed. And the bottom line is it starts to show that value of services that we all want to get at. So the potential was there of using this administrative data to help answer these really important questions that our practice partners want to know. The data limitations in doing that were gargantuan. We spend a great deal of time really looking in harmonizing those data, and you have to really get, it really limits what you can do, what you can look at, what states you can involve, et cetera. So the problems also highlighted for us the value and interest in and desperate need for detailed standardized data. In the meantime, we were also working with Glenn and others on the improved study. We're working on DACS as well. So that need for data is highlighted every day for us and with our practice partners. So this slide is really just to demonstrate all the different things for which more and more we see that standardized data are important. Our practice partners are saying this more and more themselves, including in looking at the cost studies you heard about here. We're looking at the cost of what? The cost per unit of certain services. Our DAC studies have been limited by number of health departments and what we can look at in terms of the cost of service. But when we can roll those up into other states collecting similar data, we can start to look at that in a much more comprehensive way. So we have some of these data sources down below here. I mentioned in this slide, including in Washington, we have something called the Activities and Services Inventory that we've collected for a few years, which is a little bit, in some ways, a precursor, as other states have similar precursors for the improved study. So with FAST, we've done a lot of work so far to date on the left-hand side there, and still will, but that's around this harmonization of existing administrative data and really doing something with that, this proof of concept of what we can say about our services. We're doing more and more now on that right-hand side, that standardization. And the initial phase of this was the approved study, where we really trialed these measures that we came up with painstakingly together as a six-state group. And now our team in FAST is working with all of those first six states and looking at what worked, what didn't work of these measures, and how to build them into state systems going forward, refining those measures and making them relevant and useful and accessible to practice partners. So here's a little bit of an example of when we talk about existing data, this is an example of what we're talking about in terms of existing data on the left here. And we have with FAST, you know, we've dealt with many piles of data just like that, as well as combining hundreds of spreadsheets. And a lot of the data that local health directors have, quote, available to them is in many, many spreadsheets, and it's less meaningful to them. Our practice partners tell us all the time, we'd like to be able to use these data more for ourselves, for our own performance management, et cetera. But a spreadsheet, 400 spreadsheets, get kind of unwieldy. So we're looking at, with FAST 2.0, what we call, in quotes, FAST 2.0, is how to embed these standardized measures into data systems in states around the country and expanding what we've been doing. So our work, we've been charged by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation going forward to working with these improved measures. We're building on them, we're refining them. They all could use a little tweaking, or some of them could use a little tweaking, so we're looking at that. Facilitating work with interested states in terms of how we can help them take up these measures and incorporate lessons learned, et cetera, and embed them into their systems. Making sure that these are relevant to practice, so it's a very interactive process with our practice partners. And making it always user-centered. So what do practice partners want to use these data for? And Kim really hit that at the end of her presentation in terms of how valuable these data are, not just to us as researchers, but also day-to-day practice and performance. Here's an example of some Washington data. And this is with the permission of my Washington partners, and showing this is an example of what we did with some of our improved data, looking at inspections per food service establishment. So we combine local health department food safety inspections with number of licensed food establishments per county, per health department jurisdiction. Now you'll see Wakayakum said they did 56 inspections per food service establishment last year, which is probably not accurate. And That's a little bit of a joke, don't you think, 56? And that's a very, very tiny county. But my point is that we can kind of see, we can easily see where the errors are in the data, and the health directors jump on that, and they see, oops, you know, we made a mistake. But they also, you'll also see that there's a pretty, there's not a lot of variation. They're remarkably similar in a way, and they were kind of pleased to see that, as well as this is an opportunity. One of my own practice buddies showed this at our recent Public Health Association meeting, and he was saying, I like having data like this to be able to look at and compare where I am with other counties and see how we're the same or different, be able to talk about this. And then also look at these relative to comparing me to other health departments like me, my same size, et cetera. So this has been valuable to our practice partners. Here's another example of what we've just started to do. This is kind of hot off the presses. This is a demo site, an interactive website that we're developing, again, with our practice partners in Washington, as something that we can scale up perhaps with other states. This is an interactive site. Here you see the pointer is on Chelan Douglas Health Department right there in the middle. Again, they said they were fine with me sharing this. They said these are public data. Go ahead. But when you point on Chelan Douglas, you get some information about that county. You could also click to the right and just look at health departments similar size, population density to Chelan Douglas, and then pull out what do those size health departments do in relationship to offering tobacco programs. This web page is particularly about tobacco, and again, these are improved data. So, looking at different kinds of tobacco programs, we also graph on the right looks at that relative to expenditures around tobacco, and you'll see that there are some crazy things there with those data as well, in terms of some health departments saying they're spending a lot of money per capita on tobacco, but don't indicate they're doing anything. So we've got some problems with those data, or maybe they're doing some tobacco programs that we didn't list here. It raises questions, raises as many questions as it answers, but at the same time, we're eager to engage our practice partners with these data, let them have them, use them, talk about them, et cetera. So this is an example of where we're going with some of this to help keep these data user-centered and encourage their uptake and use and proliferation of standardized data. Another thing we're doing is if you go to fastdata.org, you'll see all these improved measures on that website. And here's an example of our website. And if you click on these different domains that Glenn talked about, and then the bundles under each domain, and then you can see the measures underneath those bundles, and they're all there, and we'll be adding some of the data specifications and things like that. So this is really a site for practice partners to go to and be able to talk about these measures and see about incorporating them into their own systems and getting information, et cetera. So that's kind of a thumbnail sketch of where we're going. We've written some papers. These papers in part talk about those proof of concept kind of studies that I mentioned earlier. But that's sort of where a lot of this, some of this work is headed, or one aspect of where we're headed with it.
Fantastic. Well, I know this session has been action-packed. We have, according to the podium clock, we have 3 minutes for questions, comments, and we certainly want to hear from you. This has been a great series of examples of using the power of networks to really learn from variation. So, questions, comments, observations? Yes.
The input, the Well, for Florida, the $1.81 is a county who has sort of abdicated all their responsibilities to another county. So what the $1.81 really represents is maybe some testing that they've done, but not really any service delivery or surveillance and field work. And that's one of sort of the artifacts of this funding decrease that all of the counties have experienced in the last 5 years. Some of them have had to give up their disease intervention specialists and sort of rely on other counties to do that work for them.
Just to comment on that, too, I mean, if your county is deferring the expenditures for the services to the other county, in effect, they're sending the bill to somebody else. The accounting system is still looking at, well, they're not spending any money on it, so it looks like, you know, they're only spending a dollar per service, whereas somebody else is spending hundreds of dollars per service. Well, that one that's spending hundreds of dollars might be not only covering all the people in their county, but they're covering five other people. So that's the problem with the accounting system, is that, you know, there are limitations with these things. It's not, you know, it's based on what that county is spending, and it's not based on what that service is actually costing.
Another example of why we do these studies in PBRNs. We can't divorce the data from the context, and you guys know the context. And so, other questions, comments, observations, instructions for the future, where we should go with this work.
Yeah.
Great question. Yeah, I mean, Betty's doing a lot of the work.
Well, you know, to tell you the truth, I get really overwhelmed, and I think, oh my God, you know, this is outrageous what we've sort of taken on. But you know, they could have. John Weinberg might have said that 20 years ago with the DARPA Atlas, right? And data collection or standardizing data better in systems of healthcare. Right, and they did it. We can learn from that, and we, you know, if you take the long view, the potential is there. And I get excited thinking about how far we've come in just a short period of time, and the momentum that's building among even our local practice partners who really see it and talk about it, and will say we need better data. We even need standardized data, you know, it just is shocking. And we might have said that, you know, we could have heard that 5 or 10 years ago about accreditation, you know, and here we are now. So I think we all stand back and think about that and get overwhelmed and then get back to the business of incrementally kind of doing these next sort of things that make it happen. And it's pretty amazing. So I think the potential is there. We have to build on the momentum and hope. You know, we're very grateful to Robert Johnson Foundation for funding all of this work.
Kim, you want the last word on it?
Yeah, just very briefly. I think a lot of the states who have been doing this work have been sort of redoubling efforts to present the data back to those who report it to us. And I can tell you from our experience, it's just amazing to be showing comparative reports and people stand up or, you know, sit up straight and say, oh, you're going to use that data? And suddenly they become, you know, our local practice partners become much more engaged and interested. And, well, how did you report? Well, we need to report the same way. And so suddenly the whole conversation changes from you need to give us standard data to, you know, a more inclusive problem.
Excellent point. There's a demand and a supply side to that, and I think we're mobilizing both of those forces through this kind of work. So join me in thanking our panel today.